Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and D. Quillen, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
All right, so episode 92, the Madison Amendment. Mm-hmm. What we've got on deck, we've got, we've got a special interview with the director of 12th Night and one of the actors coming in the studio.
That's great.
Of the recent production.
The Naked Stages?
Naked Stages, awesome. Screen Room Project / Valhalla's Shakespeare Project.
Awesome, yeah.
That's really hard to get that all in one business card.
I know. I found.
And we're going to talk to Mark Charney from The Loop, which is a thing for all you playwrights out there. If you haven't heard about it, you need to get in the loop, mm-hmm. I guess.
Hey, there you go.
Because it's all about your craft and what you can do to better yourself and your professional resume and credentials and stuff. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. I can't wait. Let's
you know, because we get tips to the actors. So I think it's great that we switched it around and helped out some of the playwrights.
Sure.
The actors out there, don't get jealous. Don't get upset. Yeah. I know how some of the, you know, how damaged, fragile our egos are.
Well,
think
about it this way, actors. You know, we have to have the playwrights.
Right. Right, you know, or screenwriters. So if you're going to be a screen actor, you probably should step on over to secretsofscreenacting.com.
That's true as well. That's the podcast edition of Patrick Tucker's book, Secrets of Screen Acting.
Of the BBC,
yeah. Good stuff going on over there. Make sure you head over and let them know you heard about them right here on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. Let's just do it.
Okay.
Carlin Effect, go.
Unbelievably, a goldfish can kill a gorilla. However, it does require a substantial element of surprise.
Thus saith George.
Thus ends his catechism.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet. Yet I ask you to take time
to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play in the gutter, of course.
Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children. It's time once again for some deep fried theater!
So here we are.
Yeah, back again.
Back again, just after we've closed 12th Night. And I must say,
Well, we haven't really...
Well, that's true.
Closed
that's
it.
True. We've closed we've, the first part of the run.
We're on hiatus.
That's right. We have to take a union break.
A sojourn.
A 14-day union break. That's going to be... one thing I want to talk about is the insanity of a 9-day rehearsal process.
Oh yeah.
Because I know everybody was just kind of like, ah!
Well, the thing was, it was 9 days, but it wasn't like 9 days, 9 to 5. It was 9 days for like 3.5-4 hours.
Right.
Some of the cast.
We figured out it was slightly under 24 hours of rehearsal, I think was what we came up with. And yeah, it was just, and part of that, the first episode. Got it on the brain. The first rehearsal of that was read through.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos. Absolute chaos. But I will have to say that, that had I had any other cast but the cast that I have,
mm-hmm.
it would never have come off.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. Are you in it?
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I've been replaced, I think.
No, seriously. I mean,
that's sweet.
Every single one of the actors, including the intern actors, the students that were involved, just jump right in
the intern actors as well. Let's give a shout out to the intern stage manager, the intern assistant director, who did a lot of work, Stacey and Lauren.
Yeah, who scrambled and dealt with my BS while I was scrambling to do other things. But
and for you did a lot of work yourself, so kudos to you.
I felt like I was more or less going to get, I was putting out fires is what I felt like I was doing for the 90s rehearsal going, do we need that? No, cut it. All right, go. But our first run through was our preview night.
Yeah.
It was the first night that we'd had a chance to run it in front of an, you know, from top to bottom completely.
Yeah.
And we had a preview audience in-house.
Yeah.
Opening night went, I think, well.
Yeah. Yeah. All things considered.
All things considered. And then I really felt like the show hit its stride on Saturday night. Would you agree?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I do believe. Yeah. I mean, we finally started to get to a comfortable point.
Yeah.
Like we, you know, which should have been probably, you know, our tech rehearsal.
Right.
Yes. You know, but,
well, then we had issues with technical rehearsal too. We didn't have as much time in the space to get lights set and cues set and all that stuff as we thought we were going to have. And, that ran into problems. So, yeah.
The travails of a small professional company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm very proud of the show. I'm proud of what we did in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I just have to say, I mean, again, a shout out to every one of the cast members and every one of the student interns, the stage manager and assistant director was outstanding. Did a great job getting us through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
What are you grinning at?
I don't know. I'm just grinning. I'm happy to be here. kudos to you for your cutting.
Thank you.
I thought, Toby could have had more lines, but you know.
Right.
Could have been the Toby show.
It is a show about Toby. That was my concept. I hope that came across.
but you know, Valentine really could have been.
Yeah. Well, talk to Dustin about Curio. Yeah. Cast Dustin in one of his dual roles and he doesn't speak at all ever as that character.
But he handled that well.
Yeah.
I think, I'm really pleased with everybody's.
So, how do you think that the
pulling togetherness? I think.
How do you think, as an actor, how do you think that the transition from character to character on stage in front of the audience is working?
I think
from an actor's standpoint.
We'll from an actor's standpoint, I think it works. I think Act 5, when we have more characters on stage than we have actors, is a little confusing for some people. Maybe
for some actors, you mean?
Well,
maybe from some audience member.
I'm talking about audience.
Okay.
Maybe. Just trying to keep up with.
Sure.
But I think by that point, they've seen us switch shirts and hats and glasses or whatnot.
Yeah.
I think the audiences have gone with us, but that's been an interesting challenge. Because several of the actors, for those that haven't seen the show, several of the actors tend to say one line and then basically take a half step and they're somebody else.
Right. Or in Mark's case, he's playing the Duke and then. He is the Duke, and then basically he takes his jacket off and puts on a hat, and then in the very same spot, he's now Feste.
Right.
You know, and all this is happening on stage, and it just adds to the chaos of what's going on in Act 5. But, yeah, that was my concern, was that the audience was going to be able to follow it, you know. I think that everybody's characters are separated enough, both physically and with mannerisms and whatnot. Mm-hmm. That it's clear. Yeah, that it's crystal clear that it's that you know what's going on. That we've established it's a troupe of actors. You know, mm-hmm. We're not trying to hide anything. So I hope that most of the audiences have gotten it. I've heard good things.
Mm-hmm.
The people that have been there have talked to me afterwards and said that it's really nice and the music was nice and getting a lot of compliments on that too. So I mean, yeah, I think it works. Now, the question that you should ask right now is if we were to do the show again, would I have done it the same way?
If we were to do the show again, would you have done it the same way?
I would have cast two more actors.
Or at least one more.
Yeah, or
maybe.
At least one more. I mean, you know, budgets being what they are and all that other stuff is what I was limited by. So, but yeah, I mean.
Well, let me ask you this. As a director, did you get the show that you wanted to get?
Yes. All except for the comics.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm. No, I did. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen productions of Twelfth Night before where they focus too much on the melancholy of, you know, of Olivia, and everything's done in blacks and everything's dark and
right.
And the music is somber in some cases. But I mean, it's a funny show.
Yeah,
it's a really funny show.
And they either do that in the production that I've seen, or they go the other way where the whole kind of subplot with Malvolio and Toby and Mariah gets so kind of
evil.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
I mean, it comes across like these people are just complete jerks.
Yeah,
and Malvolio.
Well, that was my concern as well. And I think there's a lot of things I think that work really well. But one of the things I think that in the show that works especially well is the moment when you are saying, look, I've screwed this up enough.
Right.
I got to find a way to get out of it, you know? So here, help me. You do this, that kind of thing. And I think that's really clear that, you know, he gets everybody into this mess and then goes, I'm out. You know?
Well, you know, I think part of it is the shock that, you know, Olivia has fallen in love with someone.
Right.
Cause I mean, we have the street fight scene and she comes out and embraces some guy that, you know, that, we think, you know, Andrew and I, that he's a big jerk,
right?
Because of the mistaken identity and stuff. And so I think that's kind of one of Toby's clear moments. You talk about the mask dropping, is that all of a sudden it's not so much fun and games anymore.
Right. Now there's something serious going on.
Right. Because now there is someone she's wrapped her arms around and protected. And I think that's interesting. I do think that. From my approach to Toby, now we can talk about Toby.
I've talked about Toby enough. I've talked about Toby for a while.
Well, I mean, I just felt like to avoid being the evil. I mean, I know he's he's probably the evilest character in the play, but it's still a comedy.
Right.
He's a funny evil. But I have approached the idea that he's set these jokes. And they just kind of take on a life of their own. Mm-hmm. And you're right. At that moment at the end, is where he realizes that this has gone way too far.
Right.
For what he intended, it to be. And it all backfires at the end. And every night backstage, I've taken the daggers out of the back that Fabian and Andrew have shoved there. And I hand it.
He did it because he's not here right now. He did it.
So I hand it back to him when they come off stage. Here, I believe this one is yours. Yeah, and this one is yours.
You mentioned the dropping of the mask. That's one of the things that I talked about with all the actors throughout the course of the show, is that every character in the show is wearing a mask. They're hiding something from everybody, or they're hiding something from someone specific. Malvolio's hiding his affections for Olivia. You know, Olivia's sort of hiding behind her melancholy and her, mourning. The Duke is in love with being in love. And, you know, of course, Viola has to take on a completely different persona throughout the entire play. And I think that you asked me if I thought the show worked. I think that the show works really well for me because I can see every specific moment where each one of the characters has their mask either pulled away accidentally or it drops slightly and they have to recover themselves and try to hide behind it again. And then finally in Act 5, every mask comes off. You know, it's like, oh, that's who you are.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And I think that revelation right there in Act 5 works really well, I think. I think the payoff works well.
Yeah.
So I think we did a good job.
yes, kudos to us.
And you can still see the production at Valhalla Farms on May 31st and 1st, those of you who are dear listeners, May 31st and June 1st at 2 p.m., and that's at the Valhalla Farms. You can go to valhallashakespeare.com. And you can find a map on how to get there and all that stuff if you're coming in from, you know, out of town or out of country. Those of you guys who want to come in. And it's free.
It is free.
So it's free. So bring a picnic.
Come on down from Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring a picnic and a bottle of wine and sit down and enjoy some good Shakespeare on this really gorgeous farm out in Tennessee.
Yeah, wow.
Just a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. All right. Thanks for the update on the show.
No, thank you.
No. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, T.
Yeah.
When we don't have guests in studio, how do we talk to them?
Interesting question, John. We use a program called Skype.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What is that about?
Well, it's a piece of software that you can download it. It's free to download. You can use it to talk to other Skype users over the internet for free, or you can make cheap phone calls to phones and mobile phones worldwide through the Skype Out program.
Okay, and how would I perchance acquire Skype?
Well, what you can do is you can go to inexplicabledumbshow.com and click on the download Skype button on the left-hand side of the page.
It's as easy as that?
It's as easy as that.
Wow. I'll go do that right now.
Want to stay current with the Inexplicable Dumb Show?
It's quick and it's easy and it's free.
Click the subscribe button at inexplicabledumbshow.com
and you'll never have to miss an episode.
Hey, Putz, get off your fat tuchus and do something. I'm tired of yous laying around complaining about this and that. Forget about it. It's all you say. You bum.
Shut up already, Frank. Oh, God, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'm sorry. He gets wound up around the first of the month. You know, when you're supposed to pay the rent.
Now, give Frank a big tip. Hear about auditions, booking gigs, and other theater work around the South. Next.
So, John.
Yes, sir.
We have Mark Charney on the phone.
How exciting.
I know. He is involved with an organization called, or a publication, I guess I should say, called The Loop.
Oh.
Yeah. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, man.
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. So tell us about The Loop. Tell us what it is, first of all. Give us a kind of rundown of what you guys do.
The Loop is one of the first, and I think the only, online playwriting submission magazine. By that, it started as a service that Gary Garrison, who was then working at NYU, put together to compile submission opportunities for playwrights around the country. And we get them piecemeal. You'll hear about something from one publication. You'll see about something that comes up through an organization. But there was no place that was gathering all submission opportunities. The valuable thing about that, guys, is that all playwrights want to get their work read or produced. And Gary not only created an opportunity for that to be in one place, but he did it for free. Well, gradually the submission opportunities turned into letters and rants and raves and people wanting to share information. So he had me on early on as sort of a features editor. He said, well, why don't we put out some articles that were interesting to playwrights at the same time? It started very casually, and now, you know, I think a couple of years later, it's evolved into something pretty huge. It's a magazine. It's a rant. It's a place for raves. It's a place to share opportunities for playwrights. It's a place to share success stories for playwrights. It's a place to argue and yell and it's still free. The one thing it's done that I'm really proud of is that Gary refused to publish or work with any playwriting opportunity that charged a reader's fee. And that's partially because he didn't believe that, that playwrights had the money, nor should they be asked to pay a fee. And I really do think that this magazine has in some way changed the nature of playwriting opportunities out there, because more people than not now don't charge a reader's fee, so they will be admitted into places like The Loop. So I think it actually even ended up with a political ideology by mistake.
It's a revolution then, is that?
In some ways, I think, yeah. You know, and that's Gary. Now Gary works for the Dramatists Guild. And so not only is he a terrific editor of this, but he's a really good resource artist as well.
Awesome. And just for our listeners really quick, if they want to sign up for The Loop, how do they do that?
They go to www.garygarrison.com, and there's a little place that says Join the Loop on the top right-hand corner of his website. And all they have to do is click on that and give their information, and then you're immediately in line for a subscription. And if everything goes okay, every 2 weeks we put out the full magazine that has articles and interviews and letters and rants and raves and opportunities. And then every other 2 weeks, we put out something that Gary calls The Lop, taking away one of the O's, because it's mostly just submission opportunities. And we also publish a 10-minute play, which only started doing for the last 6 months.
And what's your circulation right now? What's it like? I mean, how many of these do you send out every 2 weeks?
I would imagine 250,000.
Wow. Whoa. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. Well, every article, we welcome new people and they list the new people who are there. And most every 2 weeks, we have another 75 or 100 people. And I think our people are just anxious to hear about it. Plus, it's a very readable magazine. I don't know if you guys have looked at it,
yeah.
But it is, it's funny and it's down home and I think not extremely pretentious, or we're trying not for that anyway.
Yeah, we know about trying not to be pretentious around here, right, John?
Yes, T.
Do we work all the time? Does it work all the time? No, but anyway. So, and you've been involved with it for how long? Since its inception, or
pretty much since its inception? Gary called, and actually, I think we were at a Southeastern Theater Conference meeting in Orlando, Florida, and he said, "I'm thinking about this. Would you jump in as features editor?" And I said, sure. So I was really heavily involved with writing articles and interviewing people. But about 8 months ago, he said he had an idea that every other Loop, that one that we call The Lop, would also publish a 10-minute play. And would I be literary manager as well? And as literary manager, what I do is solicit the plays, organize them, read them, and then make suggestions to Gary about ones that I think he should look at. And he doesn't look at all of them, I do. Then he looks at the ones that I think, and then out of those, we publish one every month, I suppose, of those 10 minute plays. Now, these are all authors who have had plays published before, because if we opened to everybody in 10 minute plays, I think we'd get thousands, and we don't have the staff for that. So these are all people whose 10 minute plays have been produced.
Okay. All right.
Produced and published, or just one or the other?
Pardon me?
Produced and published, or just one or the other?
One or the other.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, we interviewed Gary while we were at SETC this past just a couple of months ago.
I remember meeting you guys.
Yeah, he was a great interview, and of course he's the one that turned us on to it in the first place. And it's yet another great resource. One of the cool things about this is this internet thingy is that anybody with an idea can pretty much put an idea out. I mean, you know, put some kind of product out, which is beneficial to a lot of people. And, you know, you guys have definitely jumped on that bandwagon too. And it's good stuff, and it definitely has its place.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to kind of say what's next for Loop? How do you see it growing, or how do you want to see it growing, or?
Well, you know, we met recently when I was in New York, and our problem is that it's gotten pretty big and the readership's gotten pretty big. We don't want to charge for it, but it takes a number of people to make this thing work. Mm. And the guy who puts it together physically, always right before, you know, things come in at the very end, Gary writes his thing at the very end. It's a lot of work for a lot of people to do as a volunteer sort of online magazine. At the same time, we don't want to change it being free. So I guess our challenge is how to let this thing grow the way it needs to grow without charging anyone for it, and, you know, having everybody be volunteer labor. I mean, everyone who's involved with it has another or several full-time jobs.
Right.
And so I think if this thing were to have the life that it looks like it should have, we have to figure out a way to raise a little bit of money. Now, Gary did a really nice thing for the staff. He sold some Loop things online and told people, all right, you can get these cups, you can get these hats, we're buying them for a quarter. We're charging you $10. The money is so that we can, pay a little bit to our staff or give sort of a Christmas bonus. And then he agreed to read 6 or 8 plays, and actually discuss them with, you know, as sort of someone's personal consultant in terms of playwriting. He did that. But that was a lot of work for him. It yielded some money, but not a lot of money, and I don't think we can go that route. I think we're going to have to just stay where the people who are contributing don't get paid. And I don't mind that at all, but he thinks some of the tech people, some of the people who put this thing together, are going to get tired of the awesome responsibility without any sort of, compensation.
No, we definitely understand that conundrum.
Yeah, I bet you guys do.
Yeah, the help never gets paid enough, right?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, and I think everybody's willing now. You know, I for one think it's such a good service. I'm proud to be a part of it, and I don't, you know, I don't care about the money either way, but my wife sure wishes that I care more.
That's all in the way.
Wow, that sounds really familiar on this end as well.
Yeah, there you go, guys.
All right, so give us the website again, and just kind of plug it. Tell us when the next episode. I'm still in podcast land. When is the next issue coming out?
Okay, it's www.garygarrison.com. It's just Gary Garrison's website, and it says Get the Loop. Or be in the loop on the top right-hand corner, and you just click on that, and it will do everything for you. The next thing coming out is a LOP, and that comes out in 1 week, which has an original play and submission opportunities, and the next full Loop comes out on June 1st.
Awesome. Thanks for spending the time with us. We really appreciate it.
Sure thing, guys. And hey, thanks for asking me, and I look forward to interviewing you for our publication.
Oh, sounds great.
All right, so episode 92, I've called the Madison Amendment.
Right.
Any clues?
It's got to be an amendment to the Constitution. That's about as far as I've gotten. I haven't tied the connection in.
Well, it's another name, a synonym for the 27th Amendment, which was the most recent amendment to the United States Constitution, having been ratified in 1992.
Oh, good.
So that's how we get the tie-in. But what's also interesting about the Madison Amendment is that it took 202.5 years for it to be ratified.
No, wait a minute. When was it first presented?
It was initially submitted in 1789, and here's what the basic...
Wow, talk about tabling something.
Yeah, I don't feel so bad anymore.
Right, yeah.
The text is basically this. No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened.
Wow. Okay, so it's about congressmen being able to vote themselves...
pay raises, yeah.
Well, they're still doing that. As far as I know, they've been doing it for a while.
Well, this is they have cost of living adjustments, COLAs, rather than pay raises in the traditional sense of the term.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a pretty sizable cost of living adjustment.
The United States Supreme Court has refused certiorari for a lawsuit challenging Congress's COLAs as unconstitutional, stating that the citizens. Bringing the lawsuit had no legal standing for bringing the lawsuit as they had not proved they were personally harmed by the COLAs. Hence, members of Congress have been able to obtain increases in compensation without triggering the restrictions which this amendment seeks to impose.
Wow.
It should also be pointed out that Congress determines whether federal judges will receive an increase in their salaries.
Mm-hmm.
The only limitation being that Congress is forbidden to ever reduce judicial compensation.
Wow.
So,
well, that seems like a really good racket.
It's nice work if you can get
it. Yeah, right. Man. What was the last state to ratify?
The last state to ratify in 92 was Alabama. Your home, sweet home.
Well, it just takes us a little longer to think about things.
This is kind of a tricky sort of situation to be in here.
Yeah.
But it was proposed on September 25th, 1789, and finally ratified May 5th, 1992.
Wow.
As a recap.
Jeez. All right, so...
And there's one state that didn't ratify, and that's Pennsylvania.
Wow. Wow, way to stand firm there, Pennsylvania.
Well, also, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Nebraska, and New York also did not ratify the amendment.
Okay.
New York lawmakers rejected the amendment on February 27, 1790, and Nebraska legislators rejected it in 1987. Mm. New York specifically requested a similar amendment during New York's 1788 convention. Let's see, Pennsylvania's story is Pennsylvania House of Representatives approved the amendment on January 28, 1992, but the legislation died in committee in the Pennsylvania State Senate.
Wow. I'm just a bill. All right, so episode 93?
Yeah.
A deceived husband.
A deceived husband.
Yep.
Deceived or deceived?
Deceived.
Okay. A deceived.
Yeah, for now.
A deceived. Deceived.
No, not diseased.
Not diseased.
A deceived.
Deceived.
Husband.
Husband.
Mm-hmm. Next week.
Deceived about disease?
Maybe.
All right. I can't say it.
It's a disease. I can't. A deceived husband.
A deceived husband.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
There you go.
All right.
Next week. Let's close it out. Well, thanks to you for your interview about Twelfth Night.
Oh, no. Thanks. Thanks. thanks for sitting in.
Oh, sure. I was glad to.
We need to thank
you. Studio.
Yeah. Been working hard.
I know.
We need to thank Mark Charney for letting us know about the loop.
Yeah.
And I
don't know when we're going to be interviewed for the loop, but we'll be
everybody featured needs to go subscribe, help them out, and then look for our interview.
That's right, because we will be featured in loop at some point as well. So thanks to them for that as well.
Yeah, really.
And to Gary Garrison for bringing it to our attention. We're back to having to work now, so I have no idea what's going to be coming up for next week.
Going to be a complete surprise.
Yeah, to everybody involved. So maybe we can
talk
do a
about
preview.
Deception.
We can do a preview of some of the governor's school stuff.
We can do some governor's school stuff.
Preview?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Cool. Awesome. Well, don't forget to head over to secretsofscreenacting.com. Secrets of Screen Acting, of course, is the podcast edition of Patrick Tucker's book. Just head over there at secretsofscreenacting.com. Let them know you heard about them right here on The Inexplicable Dumb Show. Hey, we'll see you.
Bye.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry.
no ease. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.